And I am intentionally redundant because most of the times our minds have been fed so many negative things until we have to keep hammering away at the false concepts with the truth until our individual consciousness accepts the truth and we are set free. I say, whatever good you want, get full of the feeling. If you want to be healthy, and you don't have to be sick to pray the prayer for health, if you want to be healthy all of your days in this dimension, in your consciousness, in your own mind, entertain the thought, the belief, the feeling of health. Get full of the feeling of health, and that will keep you healthy. It will heal you if you're sick.
Nothing can stop me, I'm all the way up.
Hello everyone, and welcome to episode number 31 of the Kinetic Fitness Show. My name is Ali West and I'm your host, and this is my first podcast now for a couple of weeks. I have been on holiday in Canada with my wife. We went over to visit a couple of our friends that live in Halifax, Nova Scotia. It was ridiculously cold, minus 19 the day we left, but we had a great time. We chilled out, switched off, got away from it all. Had some downtime, enjoyed the holiday, ate a lot, drank a lot, but it was great. And that's the reason for no podcast for a couple of weeks, because we've been away. I could have put an episode out, but as I said, we wanted to enjoy our downtime and just switch off from everything. But I'm back now, we're back, refreshed, and ready to share more information with you and help you with your health and well-being. If you are new to this podcast is all about helping you to live a longer, healthier, happier, and more joyful life. We do that through covering a different topic centered around health and well-being each week. Some weeks we have a guest on to share their knowledge and their expertise. Other weeks it's just me talking about my experience, my knowledge from over 10 years now in the fitness industry. Before we move into today's episode, which I actually pre-recorded just a day or so before I flew out to Canada, before we talk about that and get into today's episode, if you haven't already liked, followed, or subscribed to this podcast, please just pause this episode now, hit that subscribe button or that like button, and then you will be updated with when I release a new episode of the Kinetic Fitness Show. Also, if you are listening to this on iTunes or any platform where you can leave me a review, I would be very, very grateful if you left me a review. Just tell me what you like about the show, maybe your favorite episode, anything you can, just pop that in a review and leave that for me. That would be much appreciated. Also, if you are listening to this show and you're enjoying it, whether it's this episode or another episode, and you are on Instagram, just please take a screenshot, share that in your Instagram story, and I will share it in my story as well to the rest of my followers. My Instagram handle is AliWestFitness, but all of these contact details will be in the description of this podcast anyway. Final note on this before we move into today's episode is that if you are listening to this on Anchor, on the Anchor app or the Anchor platform, you can actually leave me a voice note. I've had a few people leaving me voice notes now telling me what they like about the show and possibly some topics that they'd like covering. You can do that as well. If you are on Anchor and listen to this on Anchor, just leave me a voice note. Tell me what you like. Tell me what you want to hear more about, and I can put that into consideration. And I always reply to everyone. Whether you contact me via email, via Instagram, or via a voice note on Anchor, I will come back to you and reply to you. So do not hesitate to leave me a message or drop me a line. Let's get stuck into today's episode then. As I said, I recorded this episode with the guest just before I went to Canada, and finally putting it out to you guys now. This episode is with Dave Watts, or as he's known to his friends and family, Tintin. And he will explain to you why his nickname is Tintin. Tintin, or Dave, is an ex-professional basketball player. He still plays basketball now, semi-professionally, for our local side, our hometown here in Nottingham. The team is called Nottingham Hoods. And he is also a teacher now, so he's inspiring the next generation to lead great lives and do well with their career or their sporting endeavours. In this episode, we discuss what it takes to be a professional athlete and be the top of your game. We talk about training methods, about recovery, but more importantly, we share with you Dave's story. He shares his story and how he got to where he was. He has played basketball all over the world. He's represented England at international level, and he has a great story and great experience in that professional sporting environment. And that's why I wanted to interview him and speak to him and get this information out of his head onto the podcast and to share it with you guys. So that's pretty much what today's episode is all about. I hope you enjoy it. And if you need anything and you need any more advice and help, do not hesitate to get in touch. Let's get stuck into episode 31 and bring in Dave Tintin Watts. Dave, how are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
All good. We're here with another episode, another different angle to come from. Thanks for popping in.
No, thanks for having me.
No problem. You've got a week off, haven't you?
Yeah, half term. So excited for it. Much needed. Much needed.
Get away from the kids for a bit.
Yeah, well, just more, just get a bit of peace and quiet, peace of mind and stuff, and a bit of downtime.
And look after yourself.
Yeah, a bit of family time.
Cool. Before we get going and I ask you some questions and we pick your brain, tell everybody, including myself, a little bit of a backstory about you, who you are, what you've done, where you are now. Fill us in.
So, my name's David Watts, but everybody calls me Tintin. Stupid nickname from like my first basketball camp.
Why do people call you Tintin? Before you tell us about your background, I see this Tintin and I'm like, why?
It's because the first camp I went to, there was like 5-6 Daves. Like wherever you go, everyone knows a Dave, right?
Yeah.
And they all happen to be in like the same basketball camp. So I went with my friend Adam, who had like really blonde hair, and we were together all week because I was staying at his place. And I had as was the style at the time, I had a ginger quiff, and the coach coined Tintin and Snowy, and it's stuck ever since.
There you go.
And even like when I've made appearances on like whatever, you know, Sky Sports or Eurosport, it's Tintin Watts. Even my family, my mum and dad, sister, brother, Tintin.
It's all good, nickname's cool.
Yeah, well, I'll take it. I'm stuck with it now. But I played for a bunch of clubs around the UK. I've played in Europe, I've played internationally. Just got back from China last summer at a tournament out there. Been really lucky to have such a nice career, you know. Touch wood, no massive injuries at the moment. Apart from a bump on the head a few weeks ago, but yeah, I started in Nottingham, travelled around, and now I'm back, and it's nice to be here.
And you're still playing for Nottingham Hoods, right?
I play for Nottingham Hoods. We got promoted to Division One last season after winning the league, and we lost in the playoff final, unfortunately, to a very good Thames Valley team who actually play on Saturday. They got promoted too. So back in Nottingham.
Awesome. Tell us how you got into basketball then. How did it all start and how did it progress?
Well, it's a stereotypical story. It's a tall kid and you kind of point him towards basketball.
Yeah.
So in year 11, year 10, I can't remember what it was, I grew a lot very quickly. And a guy called Matt Walker was my PE teacher. He was like, you've got to play basketball. You've got to do it. And I wasn't really feeling it. I was quite happy riding around my BMX and my mountain bike and stuff. And he was like, no, stick with it. And he made me go to, you know, all the sessions and stuff with him. And he was really supportive, really good. And then he kept pushing me to this after school club just over the road. And then that's where I met one of my friends, Matthew Stocks. And then we just played all the time. He picked me up from Billsthorpe in the middle of Sherwood Forest, in a little mining town, nothing there. And he just drive me to different courts all over Nottingham. And all we did was just play basketball, talk about basketball, watch it on TV, play it on PlayStation, whatever we had at the time. And I just got hooked. And then all of a sudden, my little brother got hooked as well. So wherever I went, he went, and we'd cycle 10 miles to the next village and go play with our friends over there, see Aunt Nan for a quick Sunday roast, and then cycle all the way home. That's how it was. And we go rain or shine, you know, it doesn't matter like what the weather was like, what our bodies were feeling like, we'd always just go and do it. You know, we fell in love with it instantly, like straight off the bat. and Matt Starks and Matt Walker really pushed me and my brother into it, and so I was like, you could be pretty good, and they just kept supporting us and helping us out as much as they could, and that was I really appreciate that from those guys, you know.
That's quite late to pick up a sport, isn't it, being what was you 14, 15? That's yeah. Most people start playing a sport, I don't know, 5, 6, 7.
Yeah, that's true.
And why did it take you so long, or why did you come into it so late? Was it just you weren't interested, or what's the reason?
To be honest, I never knew anything about it. It wasn't on TV that I noticed anyway. It wasn't in our house. My dad used to ride motocross bikes and then rode mountain bikes, so we never usually watched like sport in the house. We never watched football or rugby or anything. And at school, we just did like, you know, cricket, rugby, football, a bit of tennis in the summer, athletics, and that was about it. And it wasn't until Matt Walker came and introduced a different range of sports that's when we first got introduced to it.
Yeah.
But it all seemed to have worked out, I guess.
Yeah, and when you started playing and you got into it and you was like living it, breathing it, talking about it, was you good at the sport straight away, or did it take practice?
Oh, it was horrible. Okay. I was awful. I couldn't even like run in a straight line. I was so bad. But we loved it, you know? And there were times where me and my brother would climb over, we'd trespass, basically, because that's how difficult and inaccessible basketball is to play in this country. So we'd have to climb over a massive gate onto another bit of land, climb over another like 12, 15 foot high fence onto a court, and then we'd play all day. And we were dreadful. So those games went on forever. So we played like first to 100 and best of 7 games.
And you're still there 2 weeks later.
Yeah, it felt like it. But after climbing all those fences, you kind of wanted to make the most of the time, I guess. But yeah, those were fun times.
So it took a lot of hard work then to get you.
Yeah, yeah. Shortly after I left school, I went to an academy in West Knox College, but I didn't really get it straight away. Didn't really understand the course, didn't understand the academy, and I didn't really have a good support network around me there. I didn't really have a lot of basketball friends that were at college. So I decided to go to a different college. So I came to South Knox here and played under a guy called Curtis Xavier. And I spent 4 years at the academy there. And he really, really pushed me. He saw a lot of potential, because for my height, I'm a relatively good shooter. And most coaches up until that point had played me at a center position, which, as you know, is
yeah.
usually the big heavy guys that, you know, bang around the basket, and I'm the opposite. I fly around the three-point line and get out on the break, and you know, that's what I do. And so he played me in my, I guess it's my natural position, for the first time ever, so I started having fun. And
what position do you play? Shooting forward?
Point guard. Shooting guard.
Shooting guard.
Point okay. guard's too much work.
Yeah.
But shooting guard, small forward, and now I play power forward too. But that's like the natural evolution, I guess.
Yeah.
You know? Because when I started playing, shooting guards were like 6'6", or 6'4", to like 6'7", and power forwards were like 6'10" plus. Again, like they're just banging face up from about 18 feet.
Yeah.
Whereas now, if you look at Golden State, they don't have a centre, they don't have a power forward, they're just all, you know, like very similar players.
Mm.
And that's how the game's changed. So luckily for me, I was trained that way, so now I can play, and I've played for a long time. But he had us in every summer for years, so as soon as like the season had finished, he'd give us a week off to go do nothing, just to get out on a bike maybe, just to keep the body ticking over, and then we'd be in the gym. To be in there for 8 hours a day, and it'd be so repetitive and so monotonous, but he drilled it into us that the key to success is repetition. Like the more you do something correctly, the better you get. And he was the strictest coach I've ever had in my entire life. The amount of sprints we had to run, the amount of times I almost threw up, I mean, it was disgusting. It was such hard work. But that led to another really good opportunity. We went to Arizona and practiced with NBA player at the time, John Amici, who is now one of my really good friends. And we were there for 4 weeks. And as you know, Arizona is so hot. Mm. In the middle of the desert, and it's just it's so difficult to where we were. So if we went from practicing in Nottingham, I think we were at Blue Coat School the week previous. And then the next thing you know, we're at LA Fitness in the middle of Scottsdale, Arizona. And it's so, so hot. You have to drink gallons of water a day. You have to go to the water store to buy it because you can't get it out of the taps because it's full of chemicals. And then you have to eat right. And this is all stuff that we weren't used to. We just used to filling your bottles at home, saving a bit of money, eating sandwiches, your students. Mm. But now you've gone from being a student to being a professional athlete within the space of 4 days. And John really did a good job. He had very high expectations for us and high standards that he set for us. We could not go home and eat a gallon tub of ice cream,
yeah,
or things like that, we had to look after our bodies. But it was very difficult because we were quite young, away from our parents for the first time, thousands of miles away. And there's a lot of things, a lot of temptations out there, that we could just, we're in a villa and we're all cooking for ourselves, cooking for each other, and that was really good. But there's a lot of younger guys with us that just didn't understand it yet, mm, didn't buy in. And John and I had this conversation regularly about the group of us that went out there. And I think I was the one that played the longest. I'm not sure it was, potluck or just the fact of the work and prep that I put in. But that experience really opened my eyes and made me realise that I could do this and I want to do this. It's a pretty good career to have. You play a sport you love and you can do it for a job.
Get paid.
Yeah, and it was the first time I realised, I can actually do this.
Mm.
And as soon as my dad picked me up from the airport, he was like, how was the trip? And I was like, I loved it. I want to do this. And then I remember him giving me a bit of a life lesson on the way up, back up to Nottingham. He's like, well, you're going to have to play catch up. These kids have been doing it since they were 4, 5, 6. You're 19. I think I was 18 at the time. He was like, well, I'm sure there's professionals out there your age. So what are you going to do about that? And then I remember falling fast asleep. So jet lagged. But for the following couple of weeks after that, he was calling me every day and making sure I was in the gym and I was running or whatever I was doing. I mean, he didn't know much about basketball at this point, but the fact that he pushed me in that direction and really encouraged me, I'm really grateful for it. And then my younger brother had really come on at that time as well, but because I was getting so much training and so much coaching, that I'd got a lot better over these 2 summers. So I'd gone home and played one-on-one, and now it wasn't even close. I was killing my younger brother, and he just didn't understand how I could have got that much better. And it wasn't until Dan joined me at the academy that he realised what we did, mm, what we do, what's expected. And he got a lot better, a lot faster than I did. So those first 4 or 5 years were really crucial.
Yeah.
Because
it sounds like you had a really good support system and a good set of coaches and a good path into the career that you wanted to eventually do.
Yeah, 100%.
How important do you think that is, having those people around you, or how important has it been for you?
I think at that young age, you do need those people around you because there's so many other people at college and in everyday life. They don't understand, and they will never understand. You just got in from work and you go out to the gym. There's people that don't understand that. Whereas we were surrounded by like-minded people who loved doing what we did. So, I lived in a house with 6 other basketball players, and all we did was eat, sleep, breathe basketball. We talked about it all the time. We watched it all the time. We hung out together, and we weren't at practice. We'd go play down the park, or we'd go play at the boys' club in Heyson Green. We'd do something, and to have that amount of support, and then you'd have the older guys above you as well that have been doing it for a bit longer than you, and they tell you the little tricks and little tips and stuff about how to prep your bag or get your shoes clean or things like this. I think that's really crucial. If you want to succeed, you have to surround yourself with people that are like-minded, mm, that want to succeed too, because all that negativity around you or distractions, people that want to go party every weekend and all that stuff, that's great, but at that age and at that time of your career when you're trying to pursue something, I think you need to lock all that out, make a sacrifice and then make a decision. And those people that like John, like Matt, like my brother, and I had a bunch of teammates that were all very like-minded, they just pushed it in the same direction and it was just natural. And anybody that didn't do what we did, they were the odd ones out.
Right.
And I think that's that was really, really crucial for me.
And what age did you end up going pro then? Because obviously you've had this professional basketball career. What age were you when you went professional?
I was 21, I think. And I signed my first contract in Belgium at Optica Hanu, just outside of Liège. And I went out for a tryout, I remember that much. And then we played in a little tournament and I played great. I was really happy with it. And then the following day we went to another tournament and I played dreadful. I still got offered a contract, which I was really happy about. And this was my first experience with like disappointment. Because at this point I've been working so hard and sacrificing and late nights of, you know, not sleeping because you're sore or your adrenaline's still pumping. And it was a horrendous experience. I didn't get paid very much. I was living in the middle of nowhere. I was sharing a bedroom with a teammate in a family's house, and it was not what I was expecting whatsoever. So after a while, I said to the team, like, you know, I need X, Y, and Z fixing, and if it's not fixing, then I'm just gonna go. And after a short period of time, it wasn't fixed. So I left, and I went to, I went back home to Sherwood Forest to my parents, after a short stop in Halifax with some friends. I couldn't really face my family. I was really embarrassed and disappointed that I put this work in and just to fall the first hurdle and give up. And I got approached by the local club at Mansfield Express at the time. They're like, well, don't take the time out. You can still practice with us. You can still play with us. It's just, you know, it's nice and easy. There's no pressure. So it's like, sure, I'll just play there. And it ended up being one of the best careers of my life. Sorry, the best seasons of my life. Just surrounded by friends, family were there every weekend, and we were really successful. We won Division 2. We were all playing great together, and it was absolutely fantastic. All we did was just play basketball. Same thing, it was back to normal. Train, watch it, talk about it, do it. You know, we were all about it all the time. And more importantly, we're all friends. And that was a big thing for me. That made me really enjoy it. And then shortly after that, I signed at Reading Rockets for 3 years. And then from there, I went to Manchester for a year. In between Reading and those seasons at Reading and Manchester, I played out in Portugal with a team out there as well. And then played in the BBL for Worcester and Manchester. And then after Manchester, I decided to move back home. Started to study a Masters at Derby Uni to play with my brother, and then didn't really enjoy that at all in Derby. That was another disappointing season, but because I dealt with the one in Belgium, I could deal with that. And then I decided to move back to Nottingham, and I got a job in a care home out in Sherwood Forest, as well as the basketball, which was just amazing. An absolute amazing experience to deal with the situations that I dealt with out there and put into practice all the life lessons that I'd learned through sport and deliver it to these young people that needed role models, that needed somebody to look up to, you know, and just needed needed anything. But and I moved from there to the school I'm at currently. And now this is what my retirement plan has always been, is to move back to Nottingham and help out inner city kids. So it's nice to go full circle. I've started here, I want to finish here, and now, weirdly, it's where I'm at.
Yeah. Let's touch on a few of those points then, and that was a nice little story of your background and the clubs you played at. Why do you think that very first contract you signed and you went to Belgium and you was young, why didn't it work out? Why do you think it didn't happen the way you thought it might happen? What were the reasons?
Because as I mentioned before, I'm naturally a shooting guard, small forward. And they were playing me and a teammate at the centre and power forward position. And whenever we went out of the set play, and we read the defence, and we took a shot, we get benched or yelled at. And we weren't getting paid enough money to be benched or yelled at, like, for me anyway. I worked too hard to just be setting screens and then running back on defense and just being another spare part. I wanted to be an impact player. I wanted, not the man, I'm not saying that my ego got the better of me, but I wanted to do something. I didn't want to just to be there and just fitting in. I wanted to stand out, and I wasn't having that opportunity. I had one really good game where we played a team that traveled to us from Luxembourg, and I scored 33 points, and that's just that happened to be the game when the coach got fired before that. Which was really good, but again, it just wasn't what I was hoping for.
And what lessons did you learn from that experience, from going out there and it not working out? What were the life lessons that you got from it?
The one thing that I took away from it that my brother reiterated a few years ago was, if you've got two options, you can either accept it or you can change it. And I refused to accept it, so I had to change it. And if I wasn't gonna, if I couldn't change it out there, then I have to change my situation and I have to come back home and then reevaluate, which is what I did. And I don't think I made a bad decision. I think I made a really good decision for me. And then following that decision, I had a really good year, a really fun year around family and friends.
And out of your career so far, so how old are you now, sorry?
35.
So
you're... I know I look young, but
you're late into your career, we'd say now, right?
Yep.
What have been the main highlights of the career that you've had?
Well, that's a tough one. Playing internationally was always a main goal of mine. I was lucky to do that, I think I was like 22, 21. So I did that pretty quickly at senior men's level.
Is this England or Great Britain? Or?
England.
Yeah.
England. Nothing too amazing. Just a couple of international tournaments, you know, around Europe and stuff. Not exactly the Olympics, but still, it was a goal that I accomplished. I was really pleased and really proud of that. And I really liked signing for Manchester Giants as well.
Yeah,
that was one of the first games I ever saw on TV. And my nan recorded after me and Daniel started playing basketball. She had Sky Sports on the old satellite TV. And she recorded on videotape Manchester Giants versus, I want to say, Glasgow, maybe. And all I remember is Julius Joseph dunking the ball in the break. And I was thinking, that's the best thing I've ever seen in my life. And Jules couldn't tell you, it wasn't a highlight. And it must have been early on in the season for him to be dunking. But I saw that and I was like, wow, that's amazing. And it was in a packed arena. It was at the MEN in Manchester. I was like, I want to do that. And then years later, I'm signing for Manchester Giants. And it was just like, it's what I've always wanted to do. It's the city I've always wanted to live in and be in. And now I've got the chance, and it's for the team I've always wanted to play for. And when we first came out, first got introduced, the crowd was absolutely rammed. We got a standing ovation, and it was one of those goosebumps moments that will stick with you for the rest of your life. It was just absolutely amazing.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I think those two things
stand out.
Yeah, and I think the third thing as well, finally, is playing for the hometown team, like back in Nottingham. Again, you're in front of like family and friends playing for the city you love.
Yeah.
You know what's
we came down the other week. It was awesome.
Yeah, it was a good game as well, actually.
Yeah, and you was on fire, mate, weren't you?
I was doing all right.
Shooting from all over.
I was doing all right. I can't wait to get back on court.
Yeah.
I'm so ready for this weekend. I've had a few weeks off with this. You know, this concussion serves me right for trying to play a bit of defense.
Let's talk then about pro basketball and pro athletes and some of the differences between players and those at the top of the game. What do you think are the main differences between these young guys that are dreaming about playing basketball and being professional, but they don't quite cut it, compared to those guys that are the top dogs that are in the, I don't know, the NBA, the top leagues in the world, doing it week in, week out? What are the main differences?
I think this goes back to one of your previous podcasts as well, about that mindset.
Yeah.
And it's about wanting to achieve and wanting to separate yourself from, you know, everyone that's just normal, because you're not normal. There's no way you will ever be normal. You know, if you commit to this, then that makes you extraordinary, because not everyone is capable of sacrificing their life for their times and social situations, etc., and pursuing what they want to do so badly. that they'll make those sacrifices. So if I was to give advice to like the young people out there that do want to, that aspire to be professional, is just do the work. There's no excuse. You just make it happen. I know basketball is difficult. I know it's hard to achieve, but those kids in America that do make it to the NBA, they're coming from absolute poverty, some of them.
Mm.
And their only way out of that is to play basketball, to go to a good high school, to then get a scholarship to a top D1 school, to then get the chance to get drafted by a contender. You know, that's their only way out. Whereas with this country, I think we have a bit of a sense of entitlement. And maybe it's not that we're aware of it, but we think, well, I've done the work, so I should probably get a contract. It's not like that. So you have to really measure yourself against those other people out there. And everyone says competition against other people. You shouldn't compare yourself to other people. In that situation, you probably should. Because every time you go home tired and don't eat right, or skip a workout because you're sore, or go to a party instead of going to that workout, that's when those guys over there still do that. And that they have such desperation that they will sacrifice everything else for that one dream. And I think that's what separates us and them. Yeah. I'm not saying that we don't have those people that do all that, but the number of people over there that do it is a lot greater. I know it's a bigger country, but I think we just need that. And we need role models that will emphasize that and push and help and provide those coaching sessions, that advice, that mentoring. And as I traveled around the country like the last couple of years, you can see like there's a lot of my old England teammates, Junior Williams, Julius Joseph, that they're now coaching junior programs, and Junior's actually coaching a team in the BBL now. And they're, you know, pushing kids through the system and doing it right. And then there was John Amici again, who built his own basketball center in Manchester for kids. And so one of my teammates from Manchester, Callum Jones, James Jones, they all went through that junior program and went off to the States, and now we're back in Manchester playing professionally again. So if you buy in and do the things that are expected of you, there's no reason why you can't achieve.
Yeah, the sacrifices is something that you've said a lot about. And I think that's the same with anything. If you want it, you've got to give up certain stuff, haven't you, to get to where you want to be. That night out, that crappy TV show, or whatever, you've got to knock it on the head.
And you know what? I understand, like, everyone loves a party, everyone loves a drink. You're only human, but it's about making that time up. Like, my friends that are still really good friends understood that. So I missed weddings, I missed birthday parties, I missed the birth of their kids and stuff, because I had games or training camp or I'd be away, you know, somewhere. And they understood, and they still understand. And it's not that I'm dismissive of it or I take it lightly, because I definitely don't. But this is my job, this is what I do, and it's part of me, you know. So for those friends that still understand and encourage, support and push me in that direction again, that's what you need to do. Surround yourself with people like that, that will be friends for life. Doesn't matter what happens, they know that that is part and parcel of who you are and what you do.
Yeah, for sure. Goes back to what we said at the start, that support system, doesn't it?
Yes, sir.
Okay, we've spoke about the mindset, and for me that is huge. I think if the desire is not there, the mind's not right, you're never going to make it to the top. But let's talk about the more physical aspects now. How important is that side of things to you and to people that want to progress in the game of basketball? So I'm talking about the training, the recovery, the nutrition.
Oh, it's massive. And early on, I never understood.
What does LeBron spend on his...
it's LeBron's stupid.
LeBron's like $1.5 million a year, is it, on his...
On his chef.
On his chef or something, yeah.
But you know what? The guy's making...
crazy money.
$35 million a game, so I think it's, you know, well worth the investment.
Yeah.
But early on in my career, I didn't understand. I didn't get it. I thought lifting weights was just to make you big and bulky. I didn't get it. It was performance. My coach would just throw me in the gym and be like, this is your program, go do this. And I wouldn't have any strength and conditioning coaching for the first 6 years, 7 years of my career. It wasn't a big thing, because I could still outplay people despite being really skinny and lightweight. Nothing's changed, but I'm a bit stronger now and I know how to look after myself. But I never stretched. I never really ate properly. I just went in the gym, did what was expected, and did as much as I could do, to my knowledge. But again, I didn't have anybody that was in the gym with me. I was just going to the weight room by myself. And looking back, that if I'd had somebody that had shown me the right way to do things and the right way to eat and meal prep, because back in 2001 it wasn't a thing, you know, we just used to walk around with tubs and tubs and tubs of cold pasta, and that's what we did. And I mean, you know as much as anyone, like, you can't just get by on pasta. You know, you need the protein in there, you need the fats, you need all sorts, you need a supplement. And all we did was just eat cold pasta. And but we were students, you know, we were in the academy. And as my career has progressed, obviously, my eyes were opened to different types of training from having different S&C coaches and stuff. And I think if you have a goal in mind to make it through the season healthy, I think it's absolutely crucial that you eat right, lift weights, and rest when you need to, because it's so important.
Yeah.
You don't realise until that one weekend that's probably like late November, and you've played like back-to-back games for like 6 weeks straight, and practice has been really tough, and you just realise that your back is really sore, your knees are sore because you've not stretched properly, and you've not lifted the weights on them, and it's just like, yeah, I wish I'd done the work now.
Yeah.
So I took that regret and then turned it into, you know, positive action and being proactive about it. So it's hard to do, again, but it's not impossible.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's proof as well. Well, you're proof of it. But there's a few guys in the NBA over in the States that on the late 30s into the 40s. I think people like Vince Carter and stuff like that. It's proof, though, isn't it? Yeah. That you can, if you look after yourself and do the hard work and look after your body, that you can have a long, healthy career.
Yeah, and he's still doing the stuff he was doing at like 20 now. Like you said, he's 41. So he's obviously done everything right. And he's just signed a one-year deal for Atlanta just because he can show the young players how to do it, how the league works, how to look after your body, how to employ a chef, how to avoid the people that will take your money from you. And it's absolutely incredible how athletic he still is. You know, he's still competitive in this league in America, in the NBA. And that's like the most physically demanding sport in the world.
Yeah.
Absolutely incredible. But again, like you said, just goes to show, if you look after yourself, do everything that's necessary, there's no reason why you can't play until, you know, your legs fall off.
Yeah, for sure. Has the training in terms of strength and conditioning and the movement patterns, the different types of training that you do, has that evolved over the years? Have you seen the progression?
So much.
Yeah.
I think that,
because I know in some sports it's kind of stagnated. I'm not going to mention any, but you see some stuff that they were doing maybe like 7-8 years ago, and you think, wow, come on, let's progress a bit. But yeah. Has basketball moved on? Yeah.
It was funny because I remember when I first started playing, it was like two layup lines, just go dunk it as much as you can, then go play. And now I remember having a conversation with my friend, and we were doing like, it was when dynamic stretching first came out, and that was a new thing. So we're doing dynamic stretching, and the crowd didn't know what to make of it, because they used to just come in and watching people dunk for like 30 minutes, and now all of a sudden, you know, you've got grown men skipping, facing each other, you know, like to face off in the middle of the court, it seems. And that took some getting used to from crowd and from players. But then there's like obviously foam rolling and how big that's become, and there's all sorts. I mean, you have NBA players now that swear by yoga and Pilates, and that's the only thing that they do. But I think you have to find what works for you. You know, it's no good me doing the same just like you be at yoga, because obviously I'm quite lightweight. I need to lift weights to get stronger and put on some size. Whereas you've got Shaq, who could probably could have done with doing some yoga during his time when he was like 360 pounds or whatever it was, you know. So I think obviously it's got to be bespoke for you, hasn't it? And like obviously yourself as a trainer, and you see a client and you already have it in your mind, I'm sure, of what you need to put them through and you know, wanting to prescribe for them, I guess. But any other player out there, any other sports person, needs to find a trainer and really make sure that everything is taken care of, really.
Yeah. And the coaching and the training's is huge, isn't it? And like, you've been proof of that, that you had three or four great coaches from a young age that helped guide you. So the coaching, I mean, we've spoke about that numerous times on this podcast, and getting a coach is massive.
One of my I can't believe I missed that off the top highlights of my career thing, but when I played for Reading, we didn't lose a game 1 year.
Wow.
And I think we're like 39-0, and we won cup, trophy, league, and playoff final by like 50 points. Like, the, I think the closest we got was we won a game by one, because we just took it so lightly, and then all of a sudden they started making shots, and we didn't know what to do because we'd not been in that situation all year. But our coach, it was Dave Titmus, Ben Fisher, and Matt Johnson at Reading, and I have never been prepared more for anything before in my entire life. In training camp, we went to Cherbourg in France. We were there every day, playing against teams out there. We were skipping with heavy ropes for like 10 minutes before practice could even start. We had to complete a certain workout before we could even step on the floor. And that was absolutely astounding. And the way he had you prepped mentally, physically, and strategically, he was just ready. And I remember in the final, we were playing up in Manchester, and we were up by 30 points with like 12 minutes to go. And he was still coaching like we were down 20. And the game was pretty much wrapped up. Like, there's no way, the way we were playing, the lineup we had on the floor, and it just how together we all were, there's no way, there's no doubt in our minds that we're going to lose that final. You know, up 30, 12 minutes left. But he called timeout because I think I missed a rotation on defense and chewed me out like we were down, you know, a million points, and I'd not done it all year. And
standards, isn't it?
Exactly. And I remember after the game, we won by like 51. After that timeout, we went on a massive run, just blew him out. And I remember him just putting his head in his hands and crying. And I was just thinking, that's how much it means to this man.
Yeah.
And we were all going nuts, jumping around, hugging each other, and after such a long, tough year. And he just, that was it. It was the emotion, the situation was just too much for him.
Wow.
Yeah.
Dedication.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah, it was amazing. That season, we were so prepped. Every practice, every minute of practice was deliberate. It was purposeful. There was no dead time. What should we do now? Oh, let's just shoot free throws for 5 minutes to cool down. Nothing like that.
Yeah.
Everything down to the nearest minute was planned, prepped. And obviously it worked. We did the business.
Yeah. For me and the guys that listen into this podcast, I know recently I've had athletes on, and it's so interesting to listen to how dedicated and how much effort and hard work is put into the training and the prep and all of those elements that need to come together going into a match or going into a race or an event or whatever it is. And there's one thing that I really want to point out off the back of this and off the back of speaking to other athletes as well, is that if the guys that are listening to this that aren't athletes, they're just, I don't know, just go to the gym and just want to be a bit healthier and move better, I think if you guys listening, just put, I don't know, 5 or 10% of the effort in the athletes and you have done in your career, that'll make a huge impact, won't it? That they'll move better, feel better, look better.
It's amazing.
Because you don't have to train like an athlete to make big changes.
No, you're right. It's about incremental, isn't it? Incremental differences every day. So it's getting 1% better every day. And I really believe that. Like, for example, when I first started playing, I was dreadful with my left hand. Like, it might as well have not been there. So I made sure, like, okay, 10 left hand layups in a row. Then it was 20. Then it was 50. Then it was like 75. And now my left hand is, you know, very, very good. So I can, you know, shoot left hooks close to the basket and stuff. I can go left, etc. But this is all because I was determined for it not to be a weakness. So if you force me left, I could just go left. You know, and I think you turn those weaknesses into strengths. So now if I go left, I'm better pulling up on my left hand than I am on my right hand. It's just how it works. So I think you're right. A regular Joe Average, you know, for example, if they just make that effort about going to the gym, you know, making that fitness class, doing a bit of spin, it's just going to make so much difference. And then also, because they're acting healthily, it will make them want to eat more healthily. And then that's going to make a massive difference too. And I've seen it firsthand. I've seen friends that are, you know, really overweight, smoke a lot, and aren't really active. And all of a sudden, I'm dragging them to practice with me or to do a bit of track work. And then they stop the smoking, save a bunch of money, get themselves a nice pair of basketball shoes. And now, the next thing you know, they're playing, you know, Division 4, Division 3, or they're playing local league, and they're actually in really good shape and can now run around with their kids, you know. And I think until you see like that kind of difference, and it's not an instant fix, but once you see that difference, you just want to keep on doing it.
Yeah,
you know, it's very addictive, isn't it?
For sure. And there's so many opportunities now, like you say, basketball, football. There's so many things you can do. Well, you don't have to spend a fortune to move.
No, just get yourself down the park.
Yeah, exactly. You know? Go for a walk.
Yeah.
Awesome. Before we wrap things up, then. If there's somebody that's listening to this that wants to maybe follow in your footsteps and have a pro career, or just wants to do things to the highest level, what would be your one to two biggest tips that you could give somebody to get to the top?
I think the first one is do the work. There's no shortcut. There's no quick fix. You just have to do the work. There's no shortcut there. No excuses. Just make it happen. Everybody can feel tired, everybody can be sick, everybody can be hurt, but there's always something you can do. And you know, the second one is always do more. So I mean, you're doing the work anyway, so what's the harm in doing an extra 100-150 shots at the practice or in the extra sprint?
Yeah, that's the difference, isn't it?
Yeah, or you know, eating that bit better than everybody else. Everyone's capable. There's some things that, you know, you don't have to coach, you don't have to teach. Being on time, being prepared, working hard, being a good teammate, all these things, they're all part of, you know, doing the work.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Being prepared and then doing it all over again the following day and being consistent with it.
And that doesn't have to be sport, does it? That can be any area of your life. It could be business, it could be relationships, it could be anything.
100%. Forbes did an article a few years back about how beneficial it was for companies to employ ex-athletes, because they're so competitive and they're so disciplined and they want to succeed and they're driven and it's contagious and they push everybody else because they're good team players. And having done it myself, I can completely vouch for that. Mm. Like if I see a member of staff that is struggling in a certain area, I'll offer some help or I'll offer some encouragement or I'll chip in where I can, you know. And I think that's insanely important in life. You have to help everybody else out and then help yourself out, you know, but no sacrifice to yourself. But I think that the main takeaway for young players is just do the work. Yeah, it's like Nike said, just do it,
put the work in.
Yeah, exactly.
Work harder, do a bit more. Mm-hmm. Those, all the top athletes, that's what they do, isn't it? Like you can just look in your sport. I mean, your LeBrons, your Jordans, your Steph Currys, your Kobe's, they'll be there 3-4 hours before anyone else, and then they'll be there 3-4 hours after everyone
else.
Exactly.
I mean,
because they want to be the best.
There's that famous story about Kobe Bryant, I think it was at the Olympics, and they just got off the plane and the trainer was like approached by Kobe, and Kobe was like, oh, you want to work out? So he's like, yeah, I'm just going to go back to the hotel, I'm going to put some stuff down and then we can go to the practice facility. So Kobe's like, okay, I'll meet you there. So this trainer, this assistant coach or whatever, makes it to the gym finally like 2 hours later, had a bit of a nap and stuff, and Kobe's already there, full sweat. And he's like, how long have you been here? He's like, oh, since we got off the plane. So we've gone straight to the gym. And then they shoot for another like 2-3 hours, then the rest of the team roll in. And then Kobe is like in his second set of practice gear, like full sweat. And he's just still going, game speed. And the fact that he's going at game speed, being so jet lagged, being so tired, these are just, you know, their excuses that he's not willing to accept.
Yeah.
And the fact that he pushes through them, like then all of a sudden you've got LeBron seeing this, Kevin Durant seeing this, these are the best players in the world. Now all of a sudden they realise they've got to keep pace. So like, okay, right. So the next thing you know, that everybody on the team's doing the same thing. So it just takes that one person.
Yeah.
That one bit of motivation, that one bit of work, and it becomes contagious. You know, and so hopefully you can do that in your work environment, sports environment, home environment, you know, and as positive you can be, it will be infectious. and it can only breed good things, right?
For sure. Mm. Awesome. Gonna wrap it up, mate.
Oh, thanks.
That was good.
Yeah.
Appreciate you coming on.
Thank you very much.
Different angle again, but that's why I love doing the podcast, because we talk about different stuff every week, and it's
really enjoy listening to them. Really enjoy listening to them. Yeah.
Thank you very much. We always end my podcast with a favourite quote, and I hope I haven't put you on the spot here, but just leave us with a favourite quote. It can be one of your own or somebody else's. Just leave us with something to finish the show.
I can't remember if it's Kevin Durant or Tim Duncan said it, or maybe both they said it, but they stole it from somebody else, so I'm going to steal it too. But it's, failure to prepare is preparing to fail.
Love it. Classic.
That's the old school one right there.
Perfect. That's it. Nice one, mate.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot.
Appreciate it.
There you have it. That's a wrap on episode number 31 of the Kinetic Fitness Show. Hope you guys listening today enjoyed that as much as I did. I always love interviewing and speaking to guests and picking their brains and learning new things. Each time I bring a guest on, I always learn something new. As always, if you need any further help, do not hesitate to get in touch. All the contact details are in the description of this podcast. I'm here to help you guys, no matter what you need, with relation to your health and fitness and well-being, do not hesitate to contact me. There's no such thing as a stupid question. Ask me any questions you have relating to health and fitness. And if you want me to cover a particular topic, if there's something that you think, Ali, why have you not gone over this yet? Or why have you not had a guest on to discuss this area? Get in touch and let me know. Shoot that topic over to me. Shoot that idea or that question, that burning question that you have, and I can answer it via the podcast. That's it for this week. I look forward to speaking to you again next week and sharing with you more great information on the Kinetic Fitness Show. Until then, have a great week. Peace and love.